We are going to talk with the senator. Represent part of his district is Yakima, Senator Curtis King from the 14th. Welcome back to the program, Senator. Good to have you.
Well, thank you for allowing me to join you again today. I look forward to the conversation.
So, thank you. Senator, let's start with some good news. I know we don't always talk a lot about good news. Being in the minority party, good news doesn't necessarily follow. But some good news with the release of the Senate budget. There are some positives to pull out of it. Let's talk first that the big thing to really pull out of the Senate budget, no new taxes.
That's exactly right. I think that's the optimum word there, and I think it's one of the things that was one of our priorities. I would say that, you know, the Democrats this year, it was a much different atmosphere, although I'm not on any of those committees that would address the operating budget, but I have been told that it was a much different atmosphere, that there was a willingness to listen. And that several of our thoughts and desires were listened to and put into the budget. And I can assure you that no new taxes would have been one of those right at the top of the list.
Now, Senator King, one of the other things, too, that I found interesting is that there is a plan in the Senate budget in case the Washington State Supreme Court rules against the capital gains tax, that there is a plan that would refund those taxpayers who pay into this before the Supreme Court issues their ruling. Is that correct?
Well, again, we got a high level overview of the budget yesterday between 4 and 5. The actual budget didn't come out until this morning, and I've been in committee meetings and other meetings, so I don't have a real sharp knowledge of what's in there. But I believe that is the case, and we'll just have to see. I haven't read it yet. So
that, to me, is progress as far as communication. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, that is more than a fair statement. That is exactly right. We also think there's a study in there that is being paid for on how to address emergency powers, which you and I talked about previously here a few minutes ago. You know, I think that's something that absolutely has to be addressed. There is no way we should ever allow one individual to run our state for almost 3 years. It's just inconceivable.
Senator King, I have to ask you, do we really need a task force for this, or is this just something for the majority party to turn around and say, well, we're going to study it, but we kind of know what we're eventually going to do with this? Republicans have been talking about this for 2 years, but Democrats need a task force?
I would say it is a way of softening what I hope will be a way of justifying a bill that the Democrats and the Republicans that can support that would change the emergency powers. That's the way things work here. So I think it gives us a way to say, well, we did our analysis, we studied this thoroughly, and here's what we suggest needs to be done. Hopefully we can get have it as a bipartisan agreement, and we can run a bill next year and make those changes that I think the vast majority of the people, and at least in the Senate, want to make in regards to how long and what kind of powers are we going to give the governor.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th here on The Bottom Line, News Radio 610 KONA.
You know, Senator, it sounds like, of course, the majority party, a lot of weight being pushed towards certain bills. But from a lot of perspectives, it appears that there's a lot better chance of some meaningful, helpful legislation that's good for Washington coming out of the Senate, whereas the House, in the perception of some, kind of getting off into the weeds a little bit. Do you sense, compared to last year, a little more cooperation, a little more eye-opening, a little more common sense in the Senate this year? Perhaps the majority party is saying, well, we kind of need to come to the middle with you on some of these things because they're problems that are too big to ignore.
Well, and I think you're exactly right. I'm going to base this on transportation, the transportation negotiations and budgets for the Senate as well. It was a much different atmosphere than we had last year. I think there was much more, a much greater willingness to listen, to collaborate on ideas, and even accept several of our Republican ideas and incorporate it not only into the operating budget, but the transportation budget as well.
And I'm sure that with the success of the transportation budget, it would be safe to say that a wish list would be to adopt some of your ideas towards returning police pursuits and law enforcement capabilities to more reasonable levels. I would presume that that's still a big priority or an effort.
Well, very much so. We passed a pursuit bill out of the Senate. It passed with, I think, two extra votes, if I remember correctly. So it had 27 votes. But it was a necessary, the way I would put it is it's a necessary bill. It did move us back and allow us to do a few more pursuits, but it wasn't sufficient. We got a long way to go. The best example I could give you is you can't pursue somebody that's in a stolen car, even if you know it's a stolen car. I got a list a couple of days after we passed that bill from the police and sheriffs, and I have it here somewhere on my desk, but there are like 15 things that they can't do, still can't do, under the bill that's over in the House and may not even make it through the House. But one of the things that struck me was their first list was that two cars are involved in an accident and it may involve the death of one of the drivers and the other driver flees, you cannot pursue that driver. They wouldn't be allowed to pursue that driver. And it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
I was just told by Dave that, the 36th had done a town hall, and they said that all of these bills were about, they were about misinformation, and that we were fear-mongering, and that it was just the Republicans and the law enforcement that were doing this. And I can tell you, all you got to do is look at the number of but car-related deaths, highway-related deaths, and where we're at. It's over 100 or over 743 deaths. And why is that? Because we don't have enough police. Because the police can't go after them and pursue them. The prime example is the guy that they found saw in Thorpe, Washington, out to the west of Ellensburg, doing 111 miles an hour. They started to go after him. They couldn't, so they stopped. He went all the way to Yakima, got just outside of Sunnyside, and for some reason was going the wrong direction and hit a car head on and killed two young people, two kids. And it's because we couldn't pursue him, because we couldn't stop it. It happened over here again on our west side with a guy running into a semi, and it killed him. These are the things that are just unbelievable that we're still allowing to happen. And then to have them say it's fear-mongering is just unbelievable. I mean, you look at the number of overdose deaths or deaths because of taking too many drugs. And that's gone through the absolute roof. And why is that? It's because you can't arrest anybody anymore for the mere possession of cocaine or fentanyl or whatever, any of those drugs. You can't arrest them. All you can say to them is, we have a program that'll help you get off of these drugs. Would you like a brochure, and can we help you get into it? And after they tell you you're number one and then walk off, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
This is why, misinformation. I think if anybody is spewing misinformation, it's those individuals that want to keep reducing what our police can do and how they can do it. That's who's spewing the misinformation.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th District here on The Bottom Line.
Senator, and I was just curious, and I'm not sure how much you can elaborate. We hear the talking points from the majority party. We heard about that dubious study with Senator Dinger from UW about police pursuit fatalities. But have you had any opportunities to one-on-one talk with some of these folks that are in favor of handcuffing the police? Have you had a chance to maybe sit down and talk with them and ask them, and if so, what's kind of the grassroots response that they give to you? Because we hear the official stuff, but have any of you, when you sit down and say, hey, let's talk about this, or what are the reasons they give you?
What it really boils down to, and we see it in a variety of lesser things. I mean, we had a bill as an example that said if you have a broken taillight, if you have a broken headlight, mm-hmm. if you don't have a current tab on your car, if you don't have a license plate, if you don't have a windshield, if you can run a stop sign, you can even run a red light. The bill would not allow you to pull that person over. And the reason that they said that, because that is how the police used to, they go after minorities more than anybody else, and this is how this is what they use to pull more of these minorities over. And it all goes back and started with the war on drugs, which in their opinion it was all about going after blacks and the African American community, and that's what the war on drugs was all about. It was purely racist. It was just to penalize the black communities. That's what we're hearing. And their answer is, well, if we make it illegal for the police to do that, then we're not going to have our minorities and those types of individuals arrested.
So
to me, that's what it's all about.
So it's kind
about
of their
discrimination profiling.
Profiling.
It's about profiling. That's what it's all about. And their answer is eliminate the law, and therefore you can't do it. And what that does, it puts every one of us in harm's way.
Senator King. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
I was going to say, we had gun bills heard today in a committee. Not my committee, but we had bills that went after law-abiding citizens and their ability to own and carry a gun. They're just trying to eliminate and make it harder and harder for an individual to affirm their right to own a gun and carry a gun. But on the other hand, the same list of bills, they had bills that wanted to reduce the sentences for those using guns to commit a crime. They wanted to change the enhancements for people that used a gun in the commission of a crime. So on one hand, they want to make it easier for the criminal, and on the other hand, they want to take the citizen's right away to own and carry a gun. I mean, it's this is where we're headed.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th District here on The Bottom Line. Senator King, want to ask you. The majority party from time to time seems to have this amazing ability to pass legislature that almost everyone doesn't like. and they still seem to go forward with it, namely Senate Bill 5599. This one passed out in the public hearings the majority, 80% of the people that testified during the public hearings on this bill were against it, including a large percentage of LGBTQ people that testified against this bill. This bill would basically allow minors to go into, and we've talked about it on this program a couple of times, it would allow them to go into shelters or havens, and if they went in and claimed that they were there seeking asylum or they wanted access to reproductive health, then that facility is not permitted to notify the parents of that minor, regardless of what age they are.
It is interesting because I wasn't in that committee, but I know the gentleman that sponsored the bill. I call him my friend, and I think he is. But this is just one step too far. I mean, and it's not just a step too far; it's way too far. Parents are responsible for their children, and they want to take that responsibility away from them. They would allow those entities that these kids would go to, and they are kids, you know, to give them sex altering drugs, and not have to notify their parents, not have to do anything. It's just they would have to declare that they're concerned about their parents and their sexuality, and the parents don't even have to be notified. Fortunately, you can't do any kind of operation until that child turns 18. It's interesting. We can't vape. You won't let these kids vape. You won't let these kids smoke. You won't let these kids drink. But yet, you can let them not tell their parents and go to a facility that can alter their life for the rest of their life, and you can't do anything about it. That just is mind-boggling to me.
What's even more concerning, if you look even beyond that level, Senator, is you've got the government coming in and saying that this entity does not need to notify the parent. So it says you don't call the parents. You don't have to tell them. But it doesn't assign responsibility to anyone else for the minor. So all it says is, well, you can't call them, but that's it. We're going to wash our hands of it. You can't call the parents.
Call the police either.
Can't call the police. Who knows what happens to the kid? The shelter doesn't become the guardian. Nobody has responsibility for the child, but you just can't contact the parents or law enforcement if they come in on these conditions, and then whatever happens, happens.
Right.
That's even scarier to me.
No, I agree. I mean, we have, and I unfortunately can't think of the young lady's name, young girl who is missing. She was taken away from her parents, and then they gave her back. She had two brothers and sisters. They know where the brothers and sisters are, but this girl has disappeared, and the parents can't tell you where she is. The siblings have said that she went away. You know, but nobody can find her. Nobody knows what happened. And these people have been arrested for meth treatment and all of those things. It's Oakley. Her name is Oakley Carlson.
Yes.
And she has just disappeared. And yet, there's no responsibility. There's nobody saying, what happened? You're the parents. You're the guardians. What happened? They won't do that to them. Because they know what happened, I believe. And after all this time, I'm afraid that little girl is no longer with us. But somebody needs to be held accountable for that. Somebody at DSHS or Child Protective Services or wherever needs to be held responsible for not following up on these young people. And if it happened once, it can happen again. But this is what we're getting to, is who's responsible? And I sure the heck don't want government being responsible.
I echo that sentiment completely. Senator Curtis King from the 14th Legislative District, thank you very much for your time this afternoon, sir. Always appreciate you having on the program.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again soon. Good luck with the rest of session.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity, and have a good evening.
You as well, sir.